although I have great admiration and respect for all sorts of dead and living writers, to me, two people stand completely outside all others by the degree of people of enormous generosity and talent who also have genetically in them the need of total self-effacing, and that is Shakespeare and Chekhov. And for me, the reason that I've done so few plays by other writers is that while working in the theatre, I try not to impose a point of view or let anyone impose a point of view, but all of us try to open as wide a horizon as possible. I find that it's very hard for a talented writer not to impose his vision of the world on what he's creating. And only Shakespeare is completely free of this. Nobody can say what Shakespeare wanted to say. That's why his works are inexhaustible and can be reinterpreted and searched for, re-examined endlessly through every culture, every race, without limit. And on a, I could say, a minor level, but the same phenomenon in Chekhov, which I've always partly ascribed to the fact that as a doctor has to have, that's what led me in a sense to Oliver Sacks in a quite different way, that Chekhov had to have that very discreet observation turning outwards to what was really there and trying to follow it, understand it, diagnose it, without pushing his own theory of what he wanted to see onto it. And for this reason, Chekhov, as one works on a Chekhov play, gives one the possibility of trying to go beyond the style, beyond the world vision of the author, to something more, to that unknown, beyond the known, of the mysterious, invisible nature of real human experience. And this, for me, was why it was so satisfying and so difficult and so extraordinarily rewarding to work on The Cherry Orchard, because I felt that one couldn't work on The Cherry Orchard with the idea, I know what a Chekhov play is, particularly as in the English tradition. I was brought up in an English view of Chekhov, that is a Russian with a certain Slav soul, a certain temperament, and found no. And that was a great help working in French, because the French language is so pure and transparent that one was freed from even the colloquial associations that you have to have if you translate Chekhov into good living English. That French frees one from that, and one could go straight through the actors into the life of the characters and their situations. All of this led me to have a very special, well, I've always had in watching the performances, a special feeling for Chekhov as the other counterbalancing pole to Shakespeare. So when my collaborator Marie-Hélène Estienne suddenly had sent through the mail to her this particular play from this American writer, Carol Rocamora, who had done her own condensation of this vast correspondence into a form of collage, a sort of patchwork that she conceived as a reading, but a reading which carried within it the sense of a dialogue. And when we read this, we said, this is interesting, because here Chekhov and his wife are emerging not as an author's inventions, but as two characters, and the Chekhov character has all the richness, the humour and others of Chekhov himself, and by osmosis, his wife is a character in her own right with something of this as well. So these letters are something very curious. They are not invented by anyone. They do belong to real life, and yet they have that particular purity of concentration of real people in a real situation that you might find in a Chekhov play. So it was a sort of Chekhov in life that touched us, and for us, the fact that there were the two actors with whom we'd worked on The Cherry Orchard seemed a natural marriage. So I took the play right away to my wife Natasha and to Michel Piccoli and said, shall we come together to do this? Maria Lynn then took, with great care and respect, Rocamora's first work and went back to her source, which was the letters, and readapted it into the French language, in the same time bringing in new material, doing a proper adaptation. So it is the same play redeveloped into a theatrical version, which is no longer a reading, but which enabled us to play it as a very free theatre form in which you can no longer tell, are the actors reading letters? No. There are no letters in their hands. They are talking letters. Are they in the same place? Yes. Are they in the same place? No, they aren't. It's in that way free theatre, for which we just need a free space, and the imagination of the audience comes in with us to feel two people who are physically close to one another all the time and physically separate from one another all the time, and this distance ebbs and flows through the development of their relationship. And this seemed a very interesting theatre experience to touch at the same time on the visible and invisible side of something, because in a sense here there is no visible to distract one other than three chairs and a table. Yeah. For a boring psychiatrist, one could find in deep psychoanalysis that every single decision one makes, everything that one's drawn to, have some echoes in something linking to something else in one's own makeup. I feel that our job is rarely to do everything, to put that aside, because I'm sure, and I'd say the same to any actor, the theatre is not a form for self-expression. So many young actors start with that idea, I want to be an actor because I want to be able to express myself. And I say, fuck that. Who cares? We don't want you to express your hang-ups. Bad young actors masturbating, having a wank playing Hamlet, reducing the vastness of Hamlet to their own hang-ups. And so in that way, obviously, secretly, there are all sorts of currents that come in. And if Natasha, in playing Olga, in playing it at a certain moment, subconsciously is influenced for a moment when she has been for a long period in a separation. This would go for any actor, but another actress playing it would identify with something else in their life. Piccoli will obviously identify with some other aspect. These are part of the actor's inner material, but I think that consciously and even unconsciously one must do everything to free oneself from anything autobiographical in what one does. It's like what one always says to writers about style, that style emerges when you're no longer thinking about style.